You're about to listen to a talk given at the Center for Spiritual Living Midtown at the beautiful Academy of Medicine in Atlanta, Georgia. If you want more information on our center, please see our Facebook page or our website. Thanks for listening. I hope these words of wisdom make a positive difference in your life.
Guess who's coming home for the holidays is my talk title. And yes, you're going to get a David Barrett talk, but you're going to give a David Barrett talk of what's been ingrained in me by coming to a religious science church for 25 years. I have three stories that I want to share with you that come together and say, guess who's coming home for the holidays and what it says. Whether it's we're coming home for the holidays or visiting someone for the holidays or just going to a holiday celebration or anything like that, all of this can apply to that. So some people don't go home for the holidays but are just spending some of the holiday celebrations in town and things like that. So the three stories I want to share with you, they kind of don't have anything to do with the holidays at the beginning and the end, but in the middle they fit just fine. So I'm going to share those with you. The very first one is somebody that's applying for a job. And they show up at the job interview and they think they know what they want. They really want this job. The pay is excellent and they really want it. So they sit down for the job interview process. And one of the very first things is, yeah, you know, everybody's doing the texting and everything like that. But mainly we're still old school and you're going to be preparing a lot of documents. Can you at least do 120 words per minute on the computer while we're typing up these papers? And so the person that's interviewing is sitting there going, gosh, the last I've ever been timed on it, I've only been 80 words or 90 words a minute. I've never been up to 120 words a minute. But no, I can learn to do that. I can change and learn to do that. And they're like, well, you know, some of the times we have to work late hours. Are you willing to stay late and work late hours? And the person goes, well, I've got two kids at home, and it will really be trying for me to stay these late hours and everything like that, but I can make that work. I can stay for the late hours. And they're like, you know, we have some benefits for you and everything like that, but we're only going to not even offer you insurance. What we're going to do is give you $300, and you can go online. You know, you can get your insurance online and sign up for one of these statewide insurance companies and get your own insurance, so we'll just give you $300. It's like, you know, with the two kids, that may not be enough, but I really want this job, so I'll go ahead and do that. And oh, by the way, we don't use Microsoft Office. We use Google Office. Can you use Google Office? Well, I've never used Google Office in my life before, but you know what? I can go ahead and try and I'll learn. And yes, Excel spreadsheets, never done them before, but we're going to need you to do that. So the person going through the whole interview process really wants this job, and kind of agrees to everything, but doesn't necessarily have all that it takes to get that job. But finally, at the end of the job interview, the person says, congratulations, you have the job. But this is what's happened during the whole interview process, is the person came in perfect, whole, and complete, and standing there saying, yeah, I really want this job. But the very first thing that she said, yes, I can type, you know, I'll learn how to type 120 words per minute. What she did is she turned and put her arm like this behind her back. And then I can stay late some hours, and like this, she put her other arm like this. And then each time she said, yes, I could do something, she ended up like in this decrepit mode like this, and she gets the job. The sad news is, guess how she shows up on the very first day of work? Like this. She shows up all decrepit and agreeing to everything that they were trying to be and trying to do and everything like that. Well, those questions just go on and on, and then that's what she looks like on the very first day. But you know what? This is what we look like when we go home for the holidays. And you don't know it, and you wonder why the annual tradition of spending time with the family turns out so bad. Is because you have forced yourself to kind of look like this, showing up at home, and your family says, oh, that's the David that we know and love. And you're showing up like this, and then you wonder why, for the 40th year in a row, you're having a bad holiday experience. Why is that? So if you're going home because it's tradition, you're going home like that. If you're going home out of obligation, you're going home like that. And for those of you online, it was not a pretty sight. David was all kind of crunched up and everything like that. If you're going home out of expectation, you're going home in that frame. So if you go home because you feel sorry for the circumstances, you feel sorry for your mom or sorry for your sister, or you feel sorry for yourself, you're going home for the wrong reason. You're going home in that manner. And just as you can see how the job experience is going to turn out when you show up for the very first day looking like that, is exactly how the way your holiday experience is going to turn out by showing up like that. And it's turned out that way year after year, mainly because you were the one that showed up like this, all snarled, not them, but you. You're the one that showed up snarled. I had a chance last year to go visit a friend of mine with the relatives down in Perry, Georgia. You know, there's Atlanta, there's the rest of Georgia. Perry's part of the rest of Georgia. And I sat and watched something spectacular unfold before my very eyes. So my friend up here in Atlanta is a perfectionist, and a perfectionist at most things, not all things, but is a perfectionist. At his home here in Atlanta, I might be running by just at lunchtime, and he'll be making, let's just say, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And he'll always say, David, are you sure you want one with me? Here I am. It's not a whole lot, but do you want to have a sandwich with me and everything like that? He always includes me, always double checks. Then he makes the sandwich. But he's such a perfectionist, he pulls out the bread, and it's one of those breads that you unwrap it, and it's still wrapped in a cellophane wrapper, too. So he unwraps that meticulously and pulls out all the bread that you need to do. He meticulously makes the sandwich. There's just as much peanut butter on this side as there is jelly on this side, and they have to match. The bread completely has to be covered on this side and has to be covered on that side. So he does that. And when the sandwiches are finally made, we're ready to have lunch, we cannot eat. He's got to stop and put everything away. He cleans the jelly jar, and he cleans the peanut butter jar, and he cleans up the whole counter. He double wraps the bread back up, puts it all away. Now we can eat. So he's such a perfectionist at this. So then something happened when we went down to Perry. We got there right around lunchtime, greeted the family, visited a bit, but there was no food prepared by the family. There was never any expectation that the family would prepare some food. The family, knowing we're getting there right at lunchtime, didn't have any of that. And they weren't going to do it, even though they haven't seen their son in 6 months. So my friend goes into the kitchen, he opens the single wrapped bread that's in there, throws it around, throws on some peanut butter, opens the jelly, throws it on, he makes a mess on the counter, and he comes in and he sits down where I have been left visiting with the family that I don't even know, and has his one sandwich. He didn't even offer to make me one. He didn't offer it to make his family one. He didn't do anything like that. And I couldn't understand what was happening there. And so finally, at the end of the visit and everything, we get back in the car and we're driving back to Atlanta. And you know you have to stop in Locust Grove and McDonough, and you got to just stop all the way back. So it's a long way back. And I said, you know, that was really unbelievable what just happened. And he was like, no, I don't know what happened, you know. It's like, you didn't clean up. He says, no, Mom always cleans up. She expects that to happen, you know. And he said, that's how it was when I grew up there. You know what? No one offered anything. Mom always cleaned up. So he did what he did as a 10-year-old boy there. That's how he showed up back home. Whenever he went home, he slid right into the consciousness of what was expected there. The parents were in their roles. No one was really present during the whole visit because everyone was just allowing the consciousness that was established 40 years ago to unfold. There was no new experience at all. All they had to do was step into the 40-year-old mold that they had set, and life unfolded it perfectly. And it was perfectly for their family because that's what everybody wanted to have happen for that visit. So it showed up that way. So I sat there in amazement and watched this unfold. So we each have a consciousness that is waiting for us to step into when we go home for the holidays. We can not think and step right into it. And it will unfold exactly the way the holiday did for the last 20, 30, or 40 years ago did. Or we can use the science of mind teaching. Novel idea. What this teaching is all about is change your thinking, change your life. So how do we do this? So hold on to that story about, you know, how do we show up in the holidays, that decrepit mode and everything like that, because that's the first story I want you to hold on to. The second story is what happened in youth church just 3 weeks ago. This was absolutely wonderful. And it's about a little girl who's been coming to church for a while now. Now, there's a consciousness the kids have already set up when they step into that room over there, and it's a great, great consciousness. I've heard some parents say that they wanted to stay home on certain Sundays, but it was their kids that came and said, we're going to church. We're going to go to the center. They wanted to go. So when did any kid want to go to church? When did that change? Well, it's because they know the consciousness that is set up for them already. Just like the consciousness that was set up in the home in Perry, there's a consciousness set up over here for the kids that they show up in. They're really excited about it. They know they're going to have a good time. They're not dreading it. I see this every Sunday. Paul and I will stand up there on the front steps, and the parents are coming in with their kids. The kids are bolting through the door to run through and get over to see Kathy and to see Ursula. They're that excited to be here. Now, it wasn't that way when I was a kid. We were brought kicking and screaming and dragging. And why? Exactly the same reason. We knew the consciousness was already set up for youth church for us to show up at. And it was going to be a boring Bible reading. And the only reason that we would actually go after all those screaming and yelling and crying was we were going to get a choice between white milk or chocolate milk. That's why I went to church. And we have a consciousness that's set up here in the adult church. We know what we're going to walk out with. If you listen to Paul or you listen to me, you know that we're going to walk out spiritually enlightened with something that we can use that week or for the rest of our lives with on that. So we know that there's a consciousness set up here in this room. But the kids already know what it is that they will be leaving with even before they get here. That's how they understand the consciousness. But 3 weeks ago, someone who had set up about one of the little kids, about a year and a half worth of consciousness of how they showed up at the center for every single day for the last year and a half, the consciousness was already set. They showed up just three weeks ago, and she announced to the group, today is the first day I don't have diapers. But you know, the announcement wasn't like that. It was like this. I'm not wearing diapers. That's how she shows up. So how do we react to this? Do you scoot away a little bit? You don't sit next to the child for the first day not wearing her diapers? Do you start informing the child about all the tragedies that happen on the first day of not wearing a diaper? You know, I don't necessarily remember that day for me, because, but, you know, the first day, some kids, we know what their first day is. So if it were all adults sitting around, there would have been a different outcome. But something spectacular happened. All that were around them were her peers. That's all that was there, which is all these other kids that if they've gone through that, they know that. She was safe in announcing this because the consciousness was already established before they even got in there in the morning. They already knew that it was going to be safe in there. And the kids respond overwhelmingly with, you got this. You've got this. We support you. The kids came together in support of this very first milestone. The kids don't have all the baggage we have about a newly diaperedless child. What they have is what we all used to have. We actually still have it, but we've covered it up with everything else, which is a closer touch with the universe and the understanding that the universe is geared for success. The universe wants us to grow. The universe is geared with courage. The universe has all of this as wisdom and everything. The universal aspect of themselves is more easily accessible to kids, for they have not learned to cover it all up just yet. They haven't covered it up. They've learned to be not be rational about the situation. So they all let out the encouragement of the universe. That's still there. And as kids, they haven't learned to poo-poo the whole thing. I didn't mean it that way. So they let it out. They let all the serve aspect within each of us that's there, all that we're here to do is to serve, and that's what they did. They just all came together and served the little girl. You can do this. You've got this. That's what they came together to do. But somewhere along the line in unfoldment in our human consciousness did we learn that it's every person for themselves. Every person for themselves. And we covered up the universal aspect of ourselves that is there pushing us to be encouraged and to encourage others than the self. To remember to point out to everyone they have within them the courage to meet this new situation. We don't do that. We're shy. We don't want to talk to people. And that's why I wanted to share with you this story about encouragement. In you, this very minute, is all the courage, the wisdom, love, joy of the universe to step into any new situation. But we kind of don't act like it. Whether it's wearing diapers for the first time, not wearing diapers for the first time, or not. So, how do you show up? Whether it is showing up for work as you versus not conformed to the box. What if you showed up with that job in courage, with wisdom and joy and love? No, I can't type 120 words per minute, but I have all these other attributes of myself that I'm bringing to that. Or the courage to show up home for the holidays and not stepping into that 20-year-old established consciousness. We have that courage within us, but sometimes we don't feel it, and there's no way that we can do it. Which brings me to my third story of Kennedy Schultz. He's the founder of the Atlanta Church of Religious Science, 35 years old. Paul's been probably going about 28 years of those. I've been going 25 years ever since we found that center. And he was sharing the wisdom with the congregation 24 years ago. I remember this because it was one of my very first holiday seasons. 24 years ago, just weeks before Christmas and Hanukkah, did Kennedy Schultz share the same lesson about going home for the holidays and us evaluating why it was we were going home? Why are you going home for the holidays? If you're going home for tradition, you're going home for the wrong reason. And I don't know if you remember Kennedy Schultz, he throws hand down on the podium. His teacher, Raymond Charles Barker, I bought many of his tapes. You can hear Raymond Charles Barker doing the same thing. He'd throw his hand down and make a point. If you're going home for obligation, you're going home for the wrong reason. If you're going home because you're expected to go home, you're going home for the wrong reason. And 24 years later, I still remember this one talk 24 years ago that a minister gave because he shocked me when he said this. If you're going home for any of these reasons, obligations, expectations, tradition, I challenge you to come up here and give me your airplane tickets. Come give me your airplane tickets. And if you knew Ken's humor, he said he could do something nice and in the right consciousness with those tickets rather than you do something dreadful. Now, that was back in the day where a ticket was a ticket. You could actually change the dates. You could change the names. You could turn it in for a different destination. There was no charge. Does anybody remember that day? Somebody young back here shaking his head, no, I never had the experience of that. Unlike today, where the first, we don't even get a ticket anymore. And if you want the slightest change, the change fee is greater than just buying a whole new ticket to go. So the times have changed. So not with the same fanfare that Kennedy announced about, come give me your tickets and I will spare you the torment of the holidays. But I challenge you, come give me your tickets. And just lose the fare. Of course, unless it is transferable, then by all means, come give me the ticket. So where does that leave us with those two choices, to go home and be tormented or to come up and give David your ticket? Are those the only two choices we have? Not at all. It leaves us with what this teaching is all about. This is called the Center for Spiritual Living Midtown. Center for Spiritual Living. And it's called that for a reason. It is not called the Center for Expected Living. It is not called the Center for Traditional Living. It is not called the Center for Obligatory Living. There's a reason for this. It's called the Center for Spiritual living for a reason. That's why Paul is coining the phrase for us here called making sense on Sundays. That's what we do. We make sense on Sundays. The sense of it, not at all of what we learned in church when we were kids. We were to make sense of our spirituality. It makes sense in our lives. How do we use that? So I apply that to making sense in the holidays. Why, year after year, do I have the same experience going home for the holidays? Because of our consciousness we've set up. Because of the weird box that we show up in every year. All of a sudden, we make sense of it. We understand why we have had that same experience year after year. And the even better news is that we learn how we can change our experience. Change your thinking, change your life, was an old saying we had with religious science. Change your consciousness about any life experience you have had or you're having right now or going to have, and you can change that experience. How do you change that experience? All we are talking about this morning is changing our consciousness about the holidays. I know a lot of us need a whole lot more things changed than just our holiday experience. That's come the other 25 weeks of the year. We'll talk about those. So how do we change our experience this holiday season? How do we change the experience we've had for the last 20, 30, or 40 years? We change our thinking. We don't change out there. Do you know how impossible it is to change mom, dad, your sister? So the good news is we don't have to change them. We change over here. We change in here. Now, Ursula did such a great job last week setting me up for this talk this week. Ursula had a great talk last week. If you haven't heard it, go online, upload it. It's an absolutely wonderful talk. But mainly she told us how we all ended up here in a teaching like this, a religious science church, a center for spiritual living. And she said, we are all trying to make sense of what either we were taught or making sense of what we are experiencing. But how did we all end up looking for something spiritual versus something religious? My making sense was because of the experience thing. I had a really different experience of what was going on in life. Actually, I turned around and I saw just how beautiful life was out there, and it just did not match with what the definition of God was that I had. And I was like, these two don't go together, and I was just experiencing this just by experiencing nature and everything like that. So my understanding of coming and trying to make a sense of this religion thing or anything like that was really an experience thing. So I knew I had to learn something different than what the rest of the world was teaching me about God and religion. Something in here was urging me to ask the questions. But traditional religion teaches us not to ask questions. Here we say, listen, ask, question. Ursula mentioned that it may have been experiential, like a death, a divorce, or a diagnosis. And this is kind of what happens in this movie that's coming out, Wild. And so that's exactly what happened with the woman that was searching for herself. Cheryl Strayed is the one that wrote the book. It's going to be Reese Witherspoon. They're already saying nominees for Oscars and everything like that. But in that book and in that movie, she says about the person that actually had a death in their life that really questioned them about life, which was with their mom. They had a divorce. They had a diagnosis. So what is it that I need to do? And just to escape and go across the Pacific Crest Trail is what the woman wrote about. And so one of the things that she says in there, after I lost myself in the wilderness, I found my own way out of the woods. After I lost myself in the wilderness, I found my own way out of the woods. And that's a little bit about what Ursula was talking about last week when she said the same thing about death, divorce, or diagnosis. Something happened that made you question everything that has ever been taught to you about religion or God. And you end up sort of falling off a cliff is what she said. And so, but when you fall off the cliff, what you actually are able to do is grab onto a branch and get a toehold into the side. And you really don't fall. There's a way to do this. You were living your life up here with the way everybody used to thought, the way everybody fit you into the box, into the consciousness that you had and everything like that. But something happens, this experiential thing about understanding what God is. You fall off the cliff, you're down here, and now you're living your life this way, and all the rules that applied up here no longer apply down here. They don't. Something happens when you start living a spiritual life versus a boxed up life. Something happens when that changes. So, this is the spiritual path, Ursula said. And why is it that I mentioned to you this morning, guess who's coming home for the holidays? It's a play on words with the old Sidney Poitier movie, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. For those of you who have not seen this movie, young ones back in the back, it's about race relations in America in the 60s. Way more than this, though, but it's about a young, yuppie white girl, and she's dating an African-American. And when it comes time to meet the parents, the young girl announces to her parents, guess who's coming to dinner? So that's why I said, guess who's coming home for the holidays? Because it's not who your parents think it's going to be, if you take my words on this morning. The parents have a consciousness built of rocks and walls about their own lives, as well as the expected consciousness of their daughter. It is set. There is not going to be any change to this. But the daughter did not go to the Center for Expected Living. She went to the Center of Spiritual Living. And the spiritual lived life has no expectations. The spiritual lived life does not have obligations. The spiritual lived life does not have traditions. You see, expectations are not being lived in the present moment. They are what has been established in the past. Traditions, already been established. Obligation, a little bit of a past and what's expected in the future. None of those are coming right down here to the present moment. So guess who's coming home for the holidays? None of these things, but something greater. Not the someone everyone expects on the top of the cliff, where all the rules that have applied for the 30, 40 years, you're not showing home in those rules anymore. You're showing home different on here. But showing up as the person living the spiritual life, holding onto that branch, and you've got a toehold. It doesn't feel like a whole lot, but it's going to support you. It's really going to support you. The someone who is to go home is the little girl within all of us that walks through the doors of your home when you get home and say, I'm not wearing any diapers. Say that to your family, then they'll really know you're crazy and all of that. The reason we can do it is exactly the same reason that she did it. We know there's a universe that supports us in all things. There's a universe of growth and courage and support and joy. Out here hanging on this branch is where we remember our true self. We remember that we live in a supporting universe. It may not support you with the rules that supported you up there. It actually supports you in a much greater way. Not a human way, but a divine way. Down here on this branch is your true self, not your factual self. Down here on this branch is a world full of love, of joy, of growth. Down here on this branch is a life of spiritual law that we can count on. It is not the same life up here. Up here is a rational life. That's exactly what Angela was talking about in her talking about understanding what was going on. We want a rational life. We learned about 600 years ago to live a rational life. 400 to 600 years ago, the mystics of the ages were saying, why are you turning to the rational life? Stay down here on this branch with your toehold. Stay down here. And everybody's like, no, we want the rational way of thinking. It's what we want. So the tide turned, and most people wanted everything to be rationalized. They wanted the scientific proof of the outcome. The consciousness of the time turned to excessive rationality. The modern era and its science of mechanism and reductions. It was Freud. It was Newtonian physics. We wanted all of this. But this is all a patriarchy side of life. We turned away from the right brain of intuition and emotions and turned to the rational left brain. We turned to reason and instinct and away from thoughts and sensations. So we turned to a rational way of thinking some 600 years ago. And that's the consciousness up here on the top of the cliff. Ursula last week said, but there's more to it than that. even in your rational life, is this underlying software that's running all the time, but we just don't allow it to come up. We don't allow that program to come up, even though we have this underlying software of the irrational self. Our subconscious mind has it all. We don't trust our subconscious mind. 600 years ago, we were told not to trust our subconscious mind anymore. So we've kind of changed that all along. Our subconscious mind has it all. The kids supporting the little girl back there 3 weeks ago knew exactly that. They were able to contact their subconscious mind and say to all the other kids, this is how I support you. They hadn't learned about all the scientific data of what the first day without diapers really is like. So they encourage. That's the irrational life. But you know what? This is the biggest problem we have in life, is applying excessive rationality to a truly irrational world. What's irrational? Lots of things. Sex is irrational. Dreams are irrational. Love making is irrational. Babies are irrational. Laughter is irrational. Play is irrational. Singing is irrational. The smell of new green cut grass is irrational. Spicy food, silence, grief, color, creativity, peace, nature, prayer, wilderness, fear, God are all irrational. 600 years of thinking, we're trying to apply our rational mind to all of these irrational things in life. What would life be without all those things? The irrational includes the dynamic forces governing life. In our culture, these things are still stigmatized as irrational. So we look at people and say this is irrational. Spock tells us it's irrational. We actually live our lives more irrationally than modern science and modern education would have us believe. But we don't label it that way. We think we're rational beings. Otto Rank, as a psychology expert in the 1930s, said, the epitome of the irrational is the marvel of creation itself. The epitome of the irrational is the marvel of creation itself. The marvel of creation. This is what Ernest Holmes even says. He says, there is only one miracle in the world, and that is the miracle of life. That's the only miracle. That's the same thing. The marvel of creation is what he says. We need to be in radical amazement hanging on to this branch when we're down there with our toehold. We should be in awe hanging on to that branch. Otto Rank said, civilizations like the Roman Empire have fallen because they chased the rational at the expense of the irrational. These societies chase the patriarchal agenda. The rational is part of the masculine aspect of us at the expense of the matriarchal aspect, the feminine feeling of intuition aspect of ourselves. Look at our world right now. What are we chasing? Are we chasing a rational world and not allowing any of this in? So the cure is to step out of excessive rationality and to make room for life itself. This is not to replace rationality with irrationality. They just need to be in balance. Ernest Holmes always said, be open at the top, but don't let your brains fall out. That is, be open at the top. Be open to the irrational. Be open to God. But at the same time, don't let your brains fall out. Don't let go of everything that's rational about it as well. Paul just 3 weeks ago gave a talk and used the same quote. Be open at the top, but don't let your brains fall out. Be open to the irrational aspect of life, which is life itself, the creation, the marvel of life up there. So it's saying, okay, let's go ahead and be there. Be open to the creative aspect of the universe, but to also question it. Not up here on the cliff. Let all of that go. Question it hanging down there on the small, skinny branch with a toehold. God is truly voluptuous and delicious. The irrational side is voluptuous and delicious. And here we're going home for the old same fruitcake. God is voluptuous and delicious. I'm not going home for that fruitcake this year. Not this year. Guess who's coming home for the holidays? It's not the person that's fit like this into a box and all turned and snarled and going for 40 years like that. It's not the you of obligation, tradition, expectancy who is up here on the cliff. The person coming home for the holidays is the diaperless you. It is you going back to that irrational aspect of yourself, knowing that you're supported, encouraged, even though everything on the outside, your family, the home, everything is set in stone, and here you are going to show up someplace different. The one that can stand in front of all those years of established family consciousness saying, this is the way the holidays are to be spent. This is who you are to spend the holidays with. This is the time period that we're to spend the holidays. I remember going home to my dad and stepmother's home, and I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to get off from work. So about 2 weeks ahead of time, my stepmother was saying, David, are you going to be able to come home? And it's like, well, I'm really not going to know till the last minute whether I can come home. And so she didn't like that answer. So a week and a half later did I find out I could be off that day and I could actually fly down to Miami. And so I called her saying, well, I can be there. And she said, well, I wasn't counting on you. And can you stop and bring a TV dinner on the way for yourself? So how strong of a Christmas tradition was set in a box in consciousness that we were all supposed to show up and live and have that holiday that year? Those are wonderful statements of rationality, because she needs to know how much to buy at the grocery store, she needs to do this, she needs to do that. But the irrational you has courage to go home and love the way you really want to love. Love from the branch, not from up there. Draw the courage from the branch and have the conversations you've wanted to have for years with your family, and you're just not going to because of everything that's been set in stone all those years. Have the conversation with your family, your siblings, your partner, your spouse. Draw the joy from the universe into the situation. If you want the situation to deliver joy, you're going to be waiting a whole lot, long time. Why don't you announce the joy before you get there? And see how that shows up for your holiday situation. Draw the love of the universe that is there now. Not the love that's there if you do what's rationally expected of you. I want you to draw the love of the universe that's there hanging onto the branch with your toe hold. There is love there. I want you to announce that and show up in that situation over there. The universe is here to support us, love us, encourage us this holiday season. This morning, I challenge you. If you cannot go home and be the I of you, you are truly meant to be, if you are going home in that box, if you're going home in that consciousness, please come give me your tickets. Go home this year, announce you're not wearing diapers anymore, and see how the universe responds. It will respond in a wonderful fashion because life is truly wonderful. Life is voluptuous and delicious, and so are you. And so it is. Thank you. Thank you. Ah, let's come together in this knowingness. And it's understanding how we truly are supported right here when the rest of the world is saying, I don't support you. I don't support you. I don't support you. We need to unleash all of that and truly understand that we truly live in a marvelous universe. We live in a universe that is supporting, growing, loving, caring, joyful, abundance. We need to be standing out there holding on to that branch with our toehold and understand we are supported at a universal level with all of those things. I affirm for each one of us about going home for the holidays or even just the situations that we'd never show up as what we've shown up in the past as, but we show up as somebody new, somebody diaperless, somebody with courage and love in their heart and joy in their heart. That's how we're showing up to all of these situations. Something happens. The experience changes. We don't have the experience that we had last year or for the last 40 years. And it's all changed because of one idea, an idea that you had, that you're no longer going to fit into a box of where you think you're supposed to fit. You're challenging family aspects of how it is that you're supposed to show up there. You show up as you, which is absolutely magnificent. And so that's our challenge this year, is to show up at home with this greater understanding of ourselves. There may be some things said that they don't like. They don't like how we've changed. They don't like the new center you're going to. But that has nothing to do with the truth of you. The truth of you, you're there to be you. You're there to love the way only you know how to love. You're there to share joy the only way that you know how to share joy. You're there to share wisdom only the way that you know how to share wisdom. Not the way that is expected or traditional, but the true you. This is cause for thanksgiving when we understand this is what we have as support. The universal aspect of us has already gone and set that consciousness up, just like this room was set up with a consciousness before us, just like the kids' room was set up with a consciousness before they even showed up, that they were going to have a joyful, loving experience. We go ahead and place that consciousness wherever it is that we're going, and we show up in that consciousness, one of joy, one of love, one of wisdom. This is the truth for each one of us. I release this law to the universal law, knowing that as we express these words, express this understanding of the universe, it shows up in our experience. This is the truth for each one of us, and so it is.